Donnez-moi les haricots, les mamans, les haricots sont pas salés. Oh yeah, donnez-moi les haricots, les mamans, les haricots sont pas salés.
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
Roxanne Shante, and of course you know I am listening to CKUT 90.3.
The rhymes you're about to hear me recite are dedicated to all of those that bite.
Hello everyone, welcome to John Abbott on the Air at CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Megan Bell. Today, I'll be interviewing Ina Winkelman, a social worker at the Douglas Institute in Verdun, Montreal. Thank you for being here. So today, I'd like to talk about systemic racism in healthcare, which is important to talk about, especially in regards to current events. Late in September, an Indigenous woman named Joyce Ekequant, a mother of seven, died at Joliet Hospital after not being treated properly, being called racial slurs by two hospital staff. Joyce was experiencing stomach pains and was pleading for help. In crisis, she started recording on Facebook Live and screaming for help and saying she was over-medicated. It is believed that she had adverse reaction to morphine she was given at the hospital. So as we know, tragedies like this and cases of racism do happen within the healthcare system. I'd like to know from a healthcare worker's perspective if racism really is quite prevalent within the system. So can you tell us a little bit about where you work and in which context?
Of course. I've been a social worker for over 20 years. I currently work at the Douglas Mental Health Institute in Verdun. I've worked in the CLSCs as well. I've worked in outpatient departments, the emergency inpatient departments. So I've had quite a career working in mental health. I've also had the opportunity to travel around Canada for the last 3 years, working in different contexts as well, both in sort of regular healthcare and also in mental health specific clinics as well.
And have you seen or experienced racism in your practice over the years?
Unfortunately, yes, I have. I would have to say that it is quite prevalent in mental health. I think working with diverse populations, you know, there's already a lot of stigma around people who have mental health issues. And then, you know, there's sort of an added sort of bias, I guess, if you have a mental health issue and if you're Black, or if you have a mental health issue and you're Indigenous. I think that absolutely within the system, there is racism against different cultures, different groups. I have seen it firsthand. I think it can be very blatant against an individual, where people, you know, will really, you know, can make racial comments to someone's face. But it is also very prevalent behind the scenes, I would say, when, you know, it can be a new patient that's admitted that may be Indigenous, and then staff may say, you know, oh, we know Indigenous people, you know, tend to drink, so they probably have an alcohol problem. They're probably on drugs. They're probably going to be aggressive. So these type of comments between staff really do, I think, highlight a big problem in our society, and in terms of how we view certain cultures. So, yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, we do see it very often.
Following up on that, do you think it has changed over the years?
I would have to say that yes and no. Yes, it has changed in some ways for the better, in that we are talking about it more. I think just the term systemic racism is something that we are now hearing about, and it is something that I think is being taught in classes at university. It is there are workshops now being offered. I can only speak for healthcare. I don't really know any other areas, but in healthcare there are workshops in terms of where, you know, we can sort of unpack privilege and unpack what racism means. So I think, yes, I think there is more sensitivity to it. There's more effort in trying to combat it and try to sensitize healthcare workers to it so that we can hopefully eradicate it or you know, decrease it at least. But I would also have to say no, that it still seems to be very prevalent. And my own personal opinion is that we talk about it only when a tragic event happens. And so in this case, with the death of Joyce, it has, you know, sparked the debate again and brought it to the forefront. But it's always been there. And so... that makes me think that we really haven't made, you know, a lot of progress overall as a society in combating racism. So, you know, whether it be, you know, the tragic loss of Joyce or before that, perhaps the death of somebody else, or, you know, as we see also with the Black Lives Matter movement, it's when tragic events happen that we tend to talk about it and make some progress. So that's good, but it shouldn't have to, you know, be at the cost of someone's life that we're making changes. So I would say my answer is yes and no. Thank you.
And would you say, or do you think that we are moving towards a system without or with less cases of racism?
I would definitely like to think so. I think, I would think yes, because overall, when these situations arise, when there is racism, I think they're denounced more. So they come to light more. Also, I mean, the example, you know, the tragic death of Joyce is an example of that, where, you know, technology, social media has allowed us to highlight the racism that is still existent in our system, which, you know, then the more we bring it to light, the more hopefully people are educated about it. And with education comes, hopefully, change. So I would like to think there are less cases, but, I mean, there still are, and every case is one too many. That sounds kind of like a cliche, but it is true, because, you know, every situation that isn't denounced is not okay. So I think... even though there are probably less cases, we still have a long way to go. And every time, you know, we have a responsibility, I think, as healthcare workers, that every time we hear even the smallest of comment, the most innocent of comment, that someone may think is innocent, needs to be denounced and kind of called out. And only when we do that, are we bringing it to light and forcing people to think about their words more carefully and their actions more carefully? And with that, we will be able to, you know, decrease the amounts of racism in our society.
Do you think that racism toward Indigenous peoples specifically is very prevalent?
Speaking from the point of view of healthcare, I would have to say yes. I think that, unfortunately, we do see a lot of racism towards Indigenous peoples in the healthcare system. I think that historically, there's a lot of history. There's a lot of history. I'll just speak to my own. What I know in Quebec, and there's a lot of history of abuse towards Indigenous people in our healthcare system, and so on the part of Indigenous peoples, there's a lot of mistrust towards the healthcare system, and understandably so. And so it just makes for a great divide between the services that our healthcare system offers and I think what Indigenous peoples need in terms of treatment and care. There's a lack of sensitivity in terms of what they would need to heal and what their beliefs and cultures, their beliefs and cultures, are. There's a lot of lack of information, I think, on the part of healthcare workers in terms of the different cultures that Indigenous peoples have in Quebec, and I'm very cautious to not lump them all into one sort of culture, because every community has its own set of values and cultures as well across the different tribes and communities. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to educate the healthcare system and people working in it in terms of the culture. And I think they are particularly marginalized and discriminated against in the healthcare system.
Lastly, do you agree with Legault's statement that the incident does not speak to systemic racism in Quebec? He says, "I really don't think we have this kind of way of dealing with First Nation people in Quebec." What is your take on this?
I would say my own personal experience in healthcare would be that I would have to disagree. I think we do have systemic racism in Quebec, especially towards Indigenous peoples. I can understand where he's coming from and not wanting to label it as such, because it, you know, he does not want to portray Quebecers as racist, nor the system as racist. And I don't, you know, we there are a lot of amazing people in Quebec who are not racist, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that we are all racist. But there is something to be said for systemic racism, and that it is a part of our system. Not everyone as individuals necessarily, but as a system. And so unless we really truly admit that there is systemic racism in Quebec, we're not going to be able to address it adequately. I think it is important that we admit it, that we name it, and that we then find real strategies to be able to change it. That's really the only way, I believe, that we're going to have meaningful change in the future.
And finally, what advice would you give to students as to what they can do as they enter the workforce to combat systemic racism?
That's a really great question, Megan. Thank you. What advice would I give? Well, I would definitely, I guess the first advice that I would give is to acknowledge it, and to try to understand it. I think, you know, having worked for 20 years, I am embarrassed to say that it isn't something I gave a lot of thought to at the beginning of my career. You know, starting off as a young social worker in mental health at the Douglas Institute, I just worked with individuals. I didn't think much about the culture that they came from, where they came from. I just viewed them as you know, people I needed to take care of and work with and help, which is okay too. I think absolutely there's nothing wrong with that. But I guess. I feel like there's, you know, young people today are quite privileged that they are questioning more, that they're being, I guess, challenged to question more and to think more about these type of issues than perhaps I did when I was studying. And so I would give that advice. I would ask, you know, everybody to sort of question their own feelings and thoughts around racism and what it means, and around systemic racism, how they view it, how they define it, and what it means to them. And then I would also give the advice to not stay silent. I think, you know, especially starting off in a new job, we don't want to rock the boat. We want to fit in. We want to do a good job. We want to please. But in doing so, are we also then compromising, you know, our own values? And are we also then contributing to the problem? I think we have to not be afraid to call it out, to you know, gently... call out racist comments or... you know, inappropriate comments, because unless we do so, nothing will change. So there's, you know, there's a nice way of doing that and a very, you know, polite way and politically correct way. I would definitely advocate for that, but I definitely feel like it needs to be called out. I also think we need to always think about our practice and the rules and regulations and procedures. Are they part of the problem? Because a lot of the times it's not individuals. Individuals are usually well-meaning, and especially in the helping profession and healthcare, most people get into healthcare because they want to help. And so it isn't really individuals who are, you know, wanting to discriminate against certain people. It could be our policies in place and our procedures that do that, and then we just sort of follow along without thinking of the damage that we could be doing. So that would be my advice. I think critically, stay open-minded, don't be afraid to challenge, I think that's what's going to change things in Quebec. So that's it.
So we've come to the end of the interview. I'd like to give a big thank you to everyone listening. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I'd also like to thank Ina Winkleman for being here and talking to me today, giving her perspective on some of the things we talked about. This has been Megan Bell for John Abbott on the Air at CKUT 90.3 FM.
What's going on, Montreal? Welcome to 90.3 CKUT FM. My name's Tyler Barone, and I'm actually a student over at John Abbott College and studying a radio production course. And recently, my friends and I did a bit of an interview session with some students from the college to see how they felt about the online school transition and whether or not it was difficult for them to sort of stay on top of their things with it all being virtual. So let's head over there and see what they had to say.
So how do you feel doing all this stuff online as opposed to going into a school? Well, it's really quite difficult to adapt to a purely online format. It's like I'm not too sure what my homework is here and, you know, there. It'd be a lot easier if we could just go in.
Well, it sucks because I would have wished to actually meet people physically instead of virtually. And I can't actually be on campus and actually hang around with other people. So, yeah, that kind of sucks. But still, I guess I don't get lost into the school. So that's good, too.
Feel great about the online school because I'm always with my friends, even when I'm online in online class.
I have my PS4 set up right next to my laptop, so like it's kind of hard not to just turn around and start playing Warzone or something.
So how are things working out with your homework? Are you falling behind at all?
Yeah, I guess I can say that I am falling behind, but I guess I'll just get used to it since I only have 5 classes instead of 7 like all the other people. So, yeah, I guess I'll be fine with it.
It's pretty stressful, honestly. It's kind of hard to keep track of everything. I have a notebook for like every class. I just take notes of every single, well, as much as I can, really.
Well, you heard it here first, folks, how the students really feel about this online school transition. I can tell you from personal experience, it is not fun sitting in front of a computer for 6-7 hours a day in your bedroom. It's really repetitive, really tiring. So I do not think that it is something that is easy for students, and it's all a learning curve for everybody. Once again, thank you all so much for listening. This was Tyler Barone for 90.3 CKUT FM. Have a great day, everyone.
In the midst of COVID-19, how are new college students adjusting to the new normal while attending a new school?
My COVID experience has been okay so far. It's fun to, you know, just stay at home, sit on a couch, and just look at your classes and, you know, do most of the work from home. It's much less stressful than actually showing up and sitting in the class and trying to get the teacher to like you and everything.
Going to school during a pandemic has been hard, because you don't get the campus experience of meeting new people, making friends, and meeting teachers.
I'm a new student at John Abbott, and working online has been kind of a task, I guess. It's been more of a pain. I honestly would rather go in a classroom than being online. I feel like there's a personal touch that you kind of lose, so that sucks. Unfortunately, it has to be done. But I'm very thankful that I have some classes here.
I've found working online to be a lot more difficult than working on campus, because at home, there is many things that distract you from the current task at hand. And sitting in your room for around 5 hours is pretty taxing when instead you could be walking around.
So in conclusion, most students feel that they would rather be at school and have the more campus aspect of meeting new people rather than being at home. I'm Madeline McQuinney.
Benjamin Morass.
Nathander Malette Bleh.
Eliane Latre.
Benjamin Scrieve.
With John Abbott on the air at CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you looking to make an addition to your family? An animal is the perfect addition to a family, especially during these trying times of the COVID-19 pandemic. If you're looking to adopt an animal, the best place to go is a shelter like the SPCA. The mission of shelters is to improve quality of life for animals, keeping them away from exploitation, abuse, and neglect, as well as giving the animals a voice, keeping their best interests at heart while raising public awareness to help develop compassion for all animals. Shelters save thousands of animals every year. When a person decides to rescue instead of going to a breeder or pet store, you'll know exactly what you're getting, meaning the breed characteristics will be obvious, you'll know exactly how big the dog is, and the temperament issues will be apparent. You will also be saving money along with the life. When you go to a breeder, you can end up spending thousands of dollars for a puppy that isn't exactly what you wanted or expected. Shelter animals love unconditionally, and studies have shown that caring for a pet unconditionally has an incredibly beneficial effect on your psychological, emotional, and physical well-being. Shelter animals are called rescues because they need a hero to rescue them. You can be that hero. So if you're considering getting a new companion, please go find the nearest animal shelter.
Hi, kids. Do you like smoking cigarettes? Well, shame on you. Did you know that smoking cigarettes sucks and isn't cool anymore? And that, newsflash, smoking cigarettes will kill you. Each year, 7 million people die from diseases related to tobacco use. Smoking can actually lead to cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, COPD, tuberculosis, chronic bronchitis, blindness, premature birth, death, and much more horrible stuff that you don't even want to know about. Many services and programs are available for you today. The I Quit Now helpline at 1-866-527-7383. Call for help today. The SMAT, Short Messages Against Tobacco, is a text message support line. Text SMAT, that's S-M-A-T, to get help today. Nicorette is another solution, a company offering cigarettes alternatives available to you today. Visit nicorette.ca for more information. And remember that it's never too late to make a change, unless you're dying from cancer, heart disease, stroke, diabetes, COPD, tuberculosis, bronchitis, because then it might be too late. But if not, you still have hope. Make a change today.
Good morning, everyone. I'm your host, Alexander Narynx, and thank you for tuning in to CKUT 90.3 John Abbott on the Air. Here we go with today's question. How does COVID-19 affect family relationships of Canadian residents?
Well, personally, I think it's been really difficult for everyone all across Canada during this pandemic, especially people like my neighbor. Her mom has a compromised immune system, so she can't see her during this time because the disease might kill her. So it's been really tough for everyone.
Not being able to see my family has been very difficult. My parents are elderly and live in New Brunswick, and we have a family home that we go back to every year. And because of the pandemic this year, I haven't been able to see my parents.
So how COVID-19 affects family life? We can't see the people that we love, or we have to reduce, I guess, seeing time with them. Also, for Christmas, it's going to be tough. We're not going to get our families here that we normally hang out with and see everybody all together to meet. So might have to wait a year or two. It's getting a little long, but I mean, we have to stay safe and we have to do what we have to do for now. And maybe next year it'll be a lot better.
COVID-19 affected greatly my family relationships due to the fact that they all live over 150 kilometers away from me.
We are out of time, so I'd like to thank our listeners, our audience, for tuning in for the latest episode of John Abbott on the Air. This has been Patrick Adelstein, and this has been John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care, everybody.
CKUT's 2020 funding drive has been postponed indefinitely, but we are still accepting donations to help us sustain the station's operations while we remain closed due to COVID-19. Our wide network of volunteers provides an essential service to many different communities in Montreal, and the isolation of the past few months has highlighted how important independent news, arts and culture, and music programming is for Montreal's underrepresented communities. If you are in a position to give during this time, visit ckut.ca and click on the green donate button to make a contribution, or contact funding@ckut.ca if you have any questions. Thank you for your continued support. Love, CKUT.
Still looking for a holiday gift or two for the special people in your life? CKUT has new merch, including hoodies and t-shirts, that showcase classic designs dug up from our art attic. Head to ckut.ca to discover our new merch store and find out more about sizing and shipping. Happy holidays from all of us.
This is Luke D. Real food you want, come to Mango Bay every day.
Real food. Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street. Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food.
Let's get together and feel all right.
Quand vos parents ont besoin d'aide, vous êtes là. Quand vos enfants ont des craintes, vous êtes là. Quand vos amis vivent un moment difficile, vous êtes là. Soyez là pour vous, comme vous l'êtes pour vos proches. C'est possible que la situation actuelle vous fasse ressentir des émotions difficiles ou même de la détresse. Si vous éprouvez de la difficulté à réaliser les actions du quotidien, des solutions existent. Rendez-vous sur québec.ca/allez-mieux ou appelez Info Social 811. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Samedi midi, happy birthday, feliz cumpleaños, joyeux anniversaire. Happy birthday, feliz cumpleaños, samedi midi, éter. Yéla, yélé, ouh, yélé. 30 ans déjà. Samedi midi inter. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Joyeux anniversaire. Samedi midi inter.